All right, we're back here, and we're back here with Senator Meekhoff this morning. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Duke. Good morning, listeners.
And let's see, we've got several things to talk about this morning. What do you want to start off with?
Well, I think most of the questions I've been getting from the public and through email and contact with my office are about the recently passed Healthy Michigan, or the Medicaid expansion that the governor was high on and wanted to pass. That went through a series of different things. Started last spring in the House, and they voted it out. It sat all summer in the Senate, and we worked on it and put, I believe, 17 different new additions and improvements to it, and it was voted out. was voted out of the Senate back over the House because we had changed it, and so they had to vote on it again, and went to the governor for his signature. Now, I will say to the folks that are listening, this is probably one of the more difficult things that the legislature has undertaken because, as I've talked on this program before, if you suspend for a moment the fact that we're going to print money to come to Michigan to pay for this, you suspend that for just a moment. And just clear to think about money coming into the budget and money, how it works in the budget, and then purely in an accounting way, it makes sense. Because we are going to take money that takes general fund money out of there then, and that's other money we can spend on roads and whatever else we want to spend or save or return to the taxpayers, whichever we choose. But taking that suspension again back in and thinking about that federal money that's coming, and people say, well, that's our money anyway. Yeah, but it's money that they need to print to send to us to spend on Medicaid. So at some point, you got to pay that back, and that's on our kids and our grandkids. And that's probably where I had the most difficult time wrestling with, because I hope that we, as a society, care for people enough that we can provide some health care and provide personal responsibility and other things. And I'm more in the camp that I believe our faith community and the private sector could handle that better than expanding a government program. So that being said as well, then you have to think about, you're now a bigger partner with the federal government. And I love my congressman, Huizenga, but I will say that I really don't trust that the federal government's going to have the money there when they say they're going to have it there. So now you've started a program, and likely will have to end it at some point, or find another way to pay for it, and that means raise taxes. Well, so if you're going to partner with somebody who's not very reliable, it makes it an even tougher sell.
Yes, it does.
And then even on the political aspect of it, just explaining to people, and most people think Medicaid is full of fraud and abuse and waste and everything, and in some parts of the country it is. Michigan does a very, very good job with Medicaid. We're a top five state. But try to explain to somebody that you're going to expand a program which they think already doesn't work well. So why would you do that?
Yeah.
Okay? So that's the political side of it. But you know, we actually had three great ideas of which to look over. Senator Caswell had a bill that I actually voted for, which I thought if we could have gotten a number of the personal responsibility things from the governor's plan into his plan, would have been the best one. It would have cost more. I'm not going to kid you and say that it wasn't, but it would have been all of our money and all of our control, and we wouldn't have had to cede anything to the federal government or depend on them for anything. We'd have had to do it ourselves. That had some possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Colbeck's bill, which he didn't even ask to have voted upon, which basically would convert everybody to a health savings account that's on Medicaid, that would be a great idea if we were starting from scratch, if we had nothing else in place. In fact, by implementing what he is thinking about, again, a great idea in a different context, it would actually cost us $9 billion of federal money that we already collect out of people's checks under the Medicaid and everything, FICA, that would not be coming back to Michigan. It's currently coming here now.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be a $9 billion hole. That'd be pretty tough. Pretty tough to climb out of something
that's
like that.
That's fucking real money there.
Yeah, that's probably more than you make this week, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, okay, good. So we did have some wrestling over this, how to get this done, why it should be done. The governor believes that folks that we would put into this Medicaid expansion, we would do it under managed care like we do now with our Medicaid population. And there are certain goals that the providers have to do to help make sure that these people are healthy and moving their behaviors in a healthy way. That the effort is to make sure that folks that don't have that that ability don't keep going to the emergency room, which is the most expensive health care. And if they don't have insurance, they go to emergency room, and they can't be denied care. Again, it's the most expensive care. So getting into managed care, helping them control their behavior so that they can be healthy, the governor believes that that's going to be better for Michigan in the long run and cost Michigan taxpayers less.
Okay, I've got a call coming in here. Good morning. You're online with the senator.
Yes. Senator Meekhoff, did you vote for the expansion of Medicare in Michigan?
I did not. Medicaid. Medicaid, Medicare, they're different. Medicaid, I voted no.
I can't hear anything here.
I voted no. What I voted for was...
I can barely hear you. It's like you're...
Let's see if there's an improvement I can do in that here.
Yeah, that's better, too.
Is that better?
All right. I voted no on that bill. I did vote
Could
yes on...
Could you repeat his answer, please?
I voted no on the governor's plan.
His mic isn't on, I don't think, or something.
Oh, his mic is on.
Oh,
I think it may be something in my board here. I'm not sure.
Okay, because I can hear you.
I got you coming. Hang up.
Okay, here we go. All right.
How's that? Is that better?
Well, it's all right for you, but I don't know for him yet. You'll have to speak.
See if you can hear him.
All right. I voted no on the governor's plan, but I voted yes on Senator Caswell's bill because I thought that was the one that we as a state could embrace and actually we could function with it and help people be healthier. But it would be in our control instead of accepting money from the federal government.
Did you vote to delay the program for 3 months?
Did I vote to? No, we did not.
Okay, because that I understand that cost the state $630 million.
Well, that really can't be true because nobody can start the program till this January, so there's no money lost. It just hasn't started. So,
excuse me, go ahead.
So that's not correct.
Did you vote yourself? To get lifetime health insurance?
Wow, you're reading right off the Democratic talking points. No, I did not.
Okay, good for you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And another call coming in here, I do believe. Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Yeah, good morning, Jude. Good morning, Ireland.
Good morning.
Ireland, thank you for coming to the truck parade.
Oh, that was a great day, wasn't it?
Oh, it was wonderful. And I didn't get a chance to talk to you. I talked to Joe Hovland, but I would like to encourage you to oppose Rick Jones in increasing the speed limit on the state highways.
Oh, yeah, he is out there talking about that, and that's an interesting concept. I don't know that I've studied enough to have an opinion on it, but I know Rick, being a former sheriff, has some very strong opinions on it, and I'm going to read up on it a little bit more.
Well, when you talk to him, tell him I have some strong opinions, too.
Okay.
thank you for doing a good job, Ireland.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. And good morning. You're online with our guest.
Thank you for doing a good job.
Hello, Ireland.
Good morning. Good
morning. On this health care with the... 100%, and then they go to 130% of poverty, or how does that work?
That's correct. Basically, folks that are functioning on Medicaid right now, where they get their health care from the state, they are 100% of poverty level or below. That's their earnings. This will expand it from 100% to 133%, and we're total that's about 400,000 people, 350 to 400,000 people that will be eligible.
How many of those 30%? Really need it or are entitled to it?
Well, those are two very loaded and big questions. How many will actually access it? I don't know. That's a good question.
But if they don't need it or are going to get it and don't need it, there's something wrong with that system.
I would agree. And even under the federal rules, as we understand it, that they're not even going to do any checking on these eligibility. They're just going to allow people to sign up, at least for the first year, before they start checking if they're actually eligible.
And also another question is, when this money runs out or costs more after 3 years or whatever it is, who's going to come up with the money to take care of it then?
Well, the bill actually has the language in that if the federal government changes the arrangements of which we have, and they have a couple of waivers they need to accept from us, a couple of ways we want to do it, that it actually says the program ends. The money does not come, the program ends.
Okay. Amen to that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because else you're going to be in a Michigan will be in the hole again.
Agreed, and therein lies the difficulty. Once somebody has something
right.
that's been given to them, in a sense, how do you stop it?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Budget 2. So, when the need arises, please consider one of four Dykstra locations in Holland and Saugatuck. We would be honored to serve your family.
Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Thank you for taking my call. With raising the speed limit, that's just going to create, in my opinion, more problems because then people are going to drive faster and they're going to be eating and doing who knows what on the phones while they're driving. They do that now at the speed that we're at now. If the speed is increased, seems to me that would be more dangerous.
Mm.
I would like your opinion on that.
There's a couple of things there. When we set a speed limit, we being the state police or whatever unit that is doing it, they basically do a study and they do what's called the 80th percentile. Then when they look at the speed, they look at the conditions and see what the 80th percentile is, and that's how they kind of set the speed limit. So I would suspect the state police would probably do something like that again. You know, more speed, I don't know, is dangerous. I guess if more speed was dangerous, I think everybody at Indianapolis would be dead.
Yeah.
I mean, it's differential speed that's more the problem. So if you got, that would be my concern. If somebody's, if you raise the speed limit to 80, but you still have people that drive 55, the differential is the problem.
Right.
If everybody was going 80 or everybody was going 200 like in Indianapolis, you know, obviously they have accidents as well, but it's the differential part, I think, that where the problem lies because of whatever skill level of the driver and or, you know, paying attention to a number of things that that the young lady mentioned. So that, I think, is the bigger problem.
Yeah. All right. Got another call here. Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Yeah, raising that speed limit is not the answer.
Okay. Thank you.
My husband got killed by somebody speeding.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
Too bad. Thank you.
And I think a lot of it we need to take into effect, you know, how far can you see? I mean, some of the western states where they supposedly don't have a speed limit.
I mean,
you can see for 15 miles because it's flat. So there's some other conditions that maybe make it more palatable for that to happen in other parts of the country. And maybe it's not here in Michigan.
Especially in the wintertime.
That's right.
Good morning. Online with our guest.
Yeah, on the speed limit. You know, the cost of making all the new signs and putting all these new signs up and stuff, you know, that's going to cost a lot of money to do that. Well, if the state police and the police department would issue tickets for these people that are speeding, that's money coming in. And we could hold the speed limit where it's at.
Maybe we could build highways.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Instead of spending money, let's collect some money.
All right.
Thank you.
Some of my friends with different ideas would say, well, that's why you got to have cameras on every corner so you can issue the tickets, collect the revenue, and build the roads. Well, then you got a privacy problem.
Right.
That's an interesting concept.
Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment. Can you imagine these cars on 80 or 85 miles an hour texting and talking on the telephone? What's going to happen then?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. All right. Arlen, we want to talk about the insurance thing here in just a minute. We'll right after this call. Maybe we can get into that.
Okay.
Good morning. You're on the line with our guest.
Well, good morning, Juke. Good morning, guest. You know, we're talking about, well, it's been mentioned about the speed and the speed limit possibly being looked at it, being raised. You know, I think it is a terrible idea. If you're going to raise the speed because a study says 85% supposedly of the people who have driven in this certain area, you know, are going faster than the posted speed, so we need to raise the speed limit, that's crazy. You're giving in to people who are breaking the law, and you're justifying it. So what are they going to do 20 years down the road, 10 years down the road? Take another study? Find out people are going even faster because of the new posted speed limit, and you're going to raise it again.
That's a fair point.
You need to curb what is being what is going on now. Catch these people that are speeding and adjust them. Not our speed limit.
That's a fair point.
Okay.
It's a fair point because it is a logical and straight point.
Yeah.
You need to get off of being political all the time. Get out and do what's real. The reality of it is people are breaking the law. You need to enforce these speed laws.
Yeah.
There are lots of people. I'm one of them. I'm disabled now because someone was speeding and ran a stop sign.
Mm.
That's crazy. If they're going to speed and you're going to condone it now and raise the speed limits even more, I don't want you in office. I think you are a good representative. But if you're going to condone something like this, you're going to be out of there.
Yeah.
We need somebody that's going to control the laws of our country and what's going on within our states. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your opinion. I was just basically describing what the state police do now when they do the process. How they're going to do it or how they're going to look at it, I don't know yet. I'm going to have to ask Senator Jones. It's his proposal.
It's Bill. Okay, we've got to take time out here for some weather. Weather brought to you by Kia of Holland. That's hollandkia.com. And the weather, decreasing clouds, showers, and storms with a high of 88. Mostly clear tonight with a low of 75. And tomorrow, plenty of sun with a high of 91 degrees. And right now, we're looking at 65 degrees here in the Tulip City. And we're on the line with Arlen here. And Arlen, let's start talking about the insurance thing.
Yeah, auto no-fault is something that I've discussed on this program before, and we're one of the last states left that has what's called truly auto no-fault.
Yeah.
And we have a burgeoning problem in there that we haven't been able to solve yet, and it is costing taxpayers and people with cars a lot of money. I think if you look at your last insurance bill, I think it's $170 a car
right. For
the MCCAA fund, which it's probably going to go to $200 a car. What we have is out of control medical expenses, a lot of things in there. So it's not sustainable, and we got to figure out a way to make it sustainable. And again, I think I mentioned on this program before, when it was first introduced, it was called the Grand Compromise. You were going to get your medical things taken care of, and in turn, you wouldn't be able to sue for pain and suffering. So that was the Grand Compromise. And we in the state have eliminated over the last 2 years about 40 judgeships. That would be going away. So we've lessened the burden on the system, as it were. But inside of there, we have some judges have made some rulings on what can be charged and paid for attendant care. I mean, if you had an individual who had been injured in an accident and you're staying home to care for them, how much the pay is and what all can go on. So some judges have made some rules there that we have to look at and see if the legislature makes the laws and not the judges. So we're going to try to look at that. The biggest one I think that is hanging out there is fraud. I had the privilege of going to Massachusetts and seeing the fraud prevention and the fraud discovery stuff that they've put in place for their auto no-fault. It's very impressive and lowered their costs substantially on the burden on their system. So that's another thing we really have to look at, because there has been cases around the state where the people have billed for auto no-fault and done some things that weren't appropriate. So we got to look at that. And then I think the last kind of remaining thing that's out there is, when a person is critically injured and will be that way for the rest of their life, what's the appropriate medical care?
Right.
I mean, do the benefits ever run out? And that's basically what everybody calls. They don't know. So what we're understanding is that the folks that help finance insurance companies and do the things and say, if this is an uncapped liability, meaning we're at risk for everything forever, that's going to, I have to continue raising my rates because I have to plan for some
that's
cost
right.
that's out there that I don't know what it's going to be. So there's some discussion about looking at what's the highest cost accident that's ever happened. What a care for a person for the rest of their life. So, say they got severely injured at age 18 and their life expectancy is X. What does that cost? Is it $10 million? Is it $15 million for their care for the rest of their life? What is the number? Let's pick the highest one that's ever occurred and say, all right, this is the cap. Plus inflation every year going forward, so that there is a cap. It's a high one.
Yeah,
but
I'm sure
capped,
it is.
But they're capped. So there's a thing I think that really makes some sense to folks that are on the road and know that cost keeps going up and don't really know why it keeps going up. There's some real reform there that we could do, I think, to make it make more sense. It's still going to be expensive because we have that side of it where we've not allowed people to sue for pain and suffering. So that's kind of the big thing on that side. So it's an idea that's been kicked around for about 2 years, and I think now that it's more of a reality, and maybe it's something we'll tackle yet this fall to bring some sense to it. And I neglected to say one thing. There's about 20% of folks that go to the Secretary of State's office with a certificate of insurance, get their tabs, and then the next day they cancel their insurance.
Yeah.
And so there's a bunch of folks that aren't paying that MCCA fee.
It should be paying.
It should be paying. So we got to figure out a way to make sure everybody pays into the system as well. And that's, I'm told, $12 or $15 million more every year that could go in there.
Yeah.
So it's not a right to drive. It's a privilege to drive. And some of these things that we've put in place to help protect our citizens are important. But everybody needs to be participating in that to make it work.
Okay. Time out for this word. Earl's Meats time is 10:54. Earl's Meats has all natural pet food, bones, and dog treats to keep your dog or cat healthy and happy. All right. We're here with Arlen Meekhoff this morning. And if you have questions, 395-1450. Arlen, there was one more thing you wanted to talk about this morning.
Yeah, there's a there's a policy that has been in the state for about 30 years. It's called Certificate of Need. And in the brief time, I'll try to explain it as best as I can. And it basically, it's a commission of folks that are involved in the healthcare industry, and they look at procedures and where hospitals are and stuff like that, and they say, all right, the threshold of a need for that service is there, so therefore a hospital can expand, or they can have open-heart surgery, or they can do a number of things. So it regulates that so that the costs don't get out of control. Well, you're basically, if you are a hospital and you want to expand, you have to ask your competitors if you can expand. And mostly hospitals are paid for by private donations and other things, and not state tax dollars involved. So given the state of healthcare and what's going to happen here shortly, I mean, the baby boomers, which have a decidedly different bent on how they want their healthcare, there'll be a big, big population of people that are going to be using and accessing healthcare over the next 20 to 30 years. So I think we need to look at a different paradigm, a new paradigm. Is there a way that if this expanding need is going to be there, how do we make it an economic boom for us,
mm-hmm.
for West Michigan or Michigan in general? Most people don't know that in Southeast Michigan, about 20% of the folks that access health care over there are people that come from Canada and pay cash.
Really?
for hip surgeries, knee replacements, things like that. So if that market exists, you would think it might exist in some other form. So I'm trying to figure out a way that makes some economic expansion out of that. How do we open it up so that we still protect the cost and people don't build too much and then, you know, you have to pay for it. Then their cry will be, well, you got to help me pay for it now. So how do we do that to make an economic expansion for Michigan, protecting our citizens and costs? And how do we invite some more competition in? Maybe Cleveland Clinic wants to build something in Michigan, but they can't now because of this particular, the way the commission and the CON is set up. Maybe Cancer Center or somebody wants to build something here, but because these CON things are in place, they won't necessarily or don't even try because it's so difficult. But if there's care and treatment and the ability to expand Michigan in that way, I think there's some effort that needs to be put forward to try that. And I think the an example I can give is when I served on the township board, you have zoning, you have property that's zoned.
Right.
And CON's something like that in terms of if you got something in place, it's supposed to work, and that's the way you're going to land use, and this is the way you're going to use health care. Well, there's been so many times where we've actually chipped a little bit off that CON or asked for an exception here or change that here or make this exception for that person over there. It's like you don't have the right land zoning because you make exceptions to it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's been going on. So instead of looking at it in the rearview mirror and figure out where we have to make exceptions to allow things to happen, let's look forward, figure out what it is we need to drive the economic expansion and the healthcare stuff that's going to be going on here in the future. And I think it's forward-looking. It's a long ways to go yet. I hope to introduce some things yet this fall that will help expand that. But and it won't just say, all right, Holland Hospital or Zealand or Spectrum, you're going to get an advantage here. It'll be for all the healthcare providers. How are they going to provide the services that the customers want and do it in a cost-effective way and expand the base here in Michigan to say maybe healthcare is one of the jobs of the future that needs to be supported and understood and embraced so that we can have jobs for our kids and our grandkids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does tort reform enter into this at all?
Actually, Michigan is one of the better ones on tort reform.
Really?
We have done a very, very good job. That was actually under Governor Engler where they did a lot of the tort reform. You thought the right-to-work crowd was big, I'm told, and I'm showing pictures of the doctors that were on on the Capitol lawn when they did some tort reform. So it has been, but it's probably an idea that we need to look at again.
Yeah, yeah.
We've tried to do a couple of things. We haven't been successful with all of them. Some of them have gone through Senator Marlowe's committee. And to try to open that up a little bit, but it's difficult because you got lawyers and doctors and folks there that want to practice medicine and heal people, and you got people that want to take advantage of people who don't think they were treated correctly or well or anything like that.
Right.
So it's a sticky problem. But given what healthcare is going to be for this country going forward, I think we need to figure out a way to make it work for us.
Arlen, we're out of time. I thank you so much for being our guest here this morning on Talk to Town.
Thank you, Jake.